it, sister. Make your fridges, grab 10 other fridges and turn up and watch these games.
Welcome to Giants Women Say, the podcast where we discuss all things AFLW Giants. I'm Fiona Lamb.
I'm Nat Morgan. She is here. I'm Emma Phillips.
I'm Tracy Keek.
And I'm Coach Kiwi back in the house.
Yay! In this week's episode, our final episode, we'll discuss the week that was and what we all got up to in the lead up to the AFLW Grand Final. We will chat about our experiences of the AFLW Grand Final because we didn't all stick together. We did different things. We'll discuss where we think the Giants go from here. We'll share our thoughts about the Sydney AFL's needs in terms of the women's program. We'll each share our favourite moment of the year. Ooh. And we'll say our farewells for now. So let's get into the week that was and what we got up to in the lead up to the granny.
So look, during the week, Emma and I had the great opportunity to be part of something that's quite historical in AFL Sydney, which was the attempt of UNSW Eastern Suburbs Bulldogs to create an event, a very high profile event within AFL Sydney to raise money for the club. The event had speakers of Gil McLachlan, who unfortunately due to the fire at Sydney Airport didn't make it to the event, but was supposed to be there. Mm. Nicole Livingston, Sam Mostyn, chair of North Melbourne,
Ben Buckley. Dave Matthews was there.
Dave Matthews, CEO of the Giants, was there, among other AFL commissioners and other representatives. So a 220-strong crowd was at Dalton House at Pyrmont for a three-hour luncheon. I managed to snavel a little bit of time away from work, and Emma was the official photographer. Shout out to photographer Emma Phillips.
Dalton.au.
It was a great day, but we probably got a few little things. Look, I think the most amazing thing about the day was how the AFL Sydney community got behind it. I believe that the club raised in excess of $45,000. It's the first of its kind in terms of the nature of the event. So a fantastic initiative and a great effort of a local Sydney club. One of the highlights for me was that while it was branded a sports men's lunch, which I find very difficult to believe. It could have just been a lunch or a sports lunch. It didn't have to be a sportsman's lunch because there were many women there. And there were some women of note there, Nicole Livingston and Sam Mostyn. Sam Mostyn being, of course, the first female AFL commissioner ever. So it was a great lineup of speakers and interviews and a great day to celebrate AFL in Sydney. So it was great. A couple of little things I might throw to you, Em, for your experience. There are a couple of little things we'd probably like to call out.
All right. Well, it really was a great event, and I concur completely, Trace, with what you've been saying. It really was a fantastic thing to attend. A couple of little things, including sportsman's lunch. Mike Whitney hosted the event, and he was a great MC, and he and I had a really good chat beforehand about all things sport. And he told me a great story about how his son had got involved in AFL football, and he was really switched on to the game. He's switched on to the game now. But just, I think, at the early in the piece, he said something about generally talking about football and looking out on the field at 36 blokes going hard at it or something like that. You could feel, I could feel Tracy's eyes roll from across the room. I couldn't see her, but I could certainly feel that eye roll. And, the women in the room just going, oh, here we are again, where there's talk about men and there's no recognition of women. And given the past three seasons and what's occurred very broadly for women's football, quite the oversight, I think. Anyway, he did get up and apologise about 20 minutes later, and then I think at that point I might have liked to have seen him actually address how many players, women players, are on the field, because it isn't 36. And he said, 36 players on the women field, women players on the field as well. Then went on to say, sort of to try and make up for things, talk about how great female athletes are. And he's had a lot to do with, Tracy's just digging in the studio at the moment. He has had a lot to do with cricketers, of course, of all sorts, and spoke glowingly of Meg Lanning and Elise Perry and similar type players, but said things like, and they're great speakers and they're beautiful, at which point I could feel
they're Tracy's beautiful girls.
Beautiful girls, that's right. And then I think, if that wasn't bad enough, what got me was that he then said, the girls, they they may not throw as far, they don't kick as long, but the gap is shortening, the gap is getting smaller. And I thought, well, here we are again, where I just so many, and it's not always men, not all men, but mostly men want to make this comparison, you know, and the game, the women's game, isn't going to be as good until it looks as good, it's played as well as the men. And I don't know when it is that we're going to be able to appreciate the game for what it is. Women are not as physically strong as men. I'm not looking to be as physically fit to kick as far or throw as far as a man. I don't care that I can't do that, you know. So
I think the problem is, though, in Mike's mind, he was paying a compliment. Yeah. He thought he was being generous and complimentary to the girls. They're nearly as good as us. He doesn't understand that's the wrong bit. Yeah. And so he'll continue doing these luncheons and these sportsmen's dinners and things like that, and especially at UNSW, where, Trace, you've had the last three premierships for the women's competition, haven't you?
Yeah, like, it was acknowledged at some point. But, we had Cinder Barclay and Beck Beeson at our table with Sam Mostyn and Nicole Livingston. So it was a table of, you know, sort of who's who in the club, if you like, with or who had been who, because I'm no longer there, but who's who with Nicole and Sam and other dignitaries. And, you know, it was a great celebration. It was never meant to be a celebration of women's football. However, interestingly, as a result of the comments and the eye rolling and the frustration at the table, table one, right front and centre of the stage, can I just say that Nicole Livingston and Sam Mostyn's response to that was absolutely fantastic, measured, accurate, not threatening, not aggressive, but just responsive in terms of what those things actually mean, and you know, so all power to them as women.
So they
in
could
AFL.
Take the microphone.
They were both in panels, and so they were very quick actually to address those issues. And you know, so I think from that point of view, you could be hold your head very high and be very proud of how they responded, corrected, but not aggressively or in any way that was at all demeaning to the people who may have meant well, but again fall into that discourse that's just not helpful. So I think from that point of view, Em, you know, it ended up being a much more comprehensive discussion of AFL, women's and men's, than was intended. So that's the positive outcome, I think.
Much like the Taylor Harris photo, we end up with a positive outcome because it generated such rich discussion. Can I just point out too that whilst Nicole Livingston had the microphone, she did say to the room that Tracy Kick was a phenomenal coach. She's shaking her head at the moment. But,
well, she's preaching to the converted here. We all know that, but it's nice to be acknowledged on the stage, isn't it?
It was. I think Miss Tammy Callahan might have had a little bit of influence in that.
Good on her.
What did you get up to
this week? Well, I didn't do a lot. My AFL 9s comp is over, even though the school term's not over, but it was a very long school term. So there's no games. But I think it was all just building up to the end of the season. And I was a bit emotional thinking it's nearly over. Like, it only just started, but it's nearly over. And I sort of likened it in one of my tweets to, you know, when you've got a really good book and you're up to the last chapter and you're busting to know what happens and you're getting dragged down the end, but you want to put it down because you don't want it to end as well. And that was it. I couldn't wait for Sunday in the grand final. But as soon as it comes, it's going to be all over. And that's exactly what happened. And it was a bit of an emotional roller coaster once we got there as well, for reasons we'll chat about probably later. But yeah, no other running around or anything like that, just the anticipation of the match and how it unfolded. That was me.
So, Kiwi, how did you spend the week in sunny Melbourne?
Yeah, it was pretty good weather for the most part. I actually went to the preliminary final last week, Carlton of Fremantle, and that was exciting. It was probably a crowd a little bit smaller than I thought it would be, being the last match in Melbourne. But the football itself was very good. You know, Freo were smashed beforehand, but Carlton just stepped up and probably played their grand final that week. And so I guess some of that we carried over into with the NAB League that I'm part of coaching. We've got two of our girls from last year drafted to Carlton. So we talk a little bit about how they went, and, you know, one of them did save a goal in the preliminary match, which is pretty awesome for an 18-year-old running back. But Yeah, so I did. Yeah, did some good NAB League, and we've had a really awesome win on Saturday. We kicked 7 goals, which is fantastic for a forward coach to see, because we haven't kicked too many this year. So finally, they're listening. and then coach my masters, which is the other end of the scale. So the older girls that want to learn football and just love footy, and they couldn't stop talking about where they were going to watch the grand final as well. So I think it's just inspiring everyone of all levels. So. And then Saturday night after that, football on a plane to Adelaide. That's how I prepared.
Fantastic. And Fee, you would have been busy, you know, editing the pod from last week, because it was a very long one. But then how did you...
Because that bloody Cora wouldn't shut up.
How did you prepare for the grand final?
Well, I talked a lot at work about it. So you would have seen the... I'm sure I shared it actually on our social pages that my... boss's boss made me a cake. It was going to be a Giants themed cake, but it was just the orange icing. And then there were musk sticks that have been in the news this week because, is it Norway? Sweden thinks it's one of the most disgusting foods.
Oh, it's fantastic. It tastes like soap powder.
Musk sticks were the goalposts. Right. Yeah. It was all a bit special.
But actually, do you know what it reminded me of? The first year of Sydney Women's AFL with our goalposts were made out of plumber's poly pipe held together with masking tape. And so that's they were all a bit skew-iff, and that's exactly what your cake reminded me of.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'll bet those goalposts tasted better than bloody musk sticks.
I think they are putrid. The only good thing is the fruit sticks. Is that what the other ones are called, where you got other colours? They were okay, but musk sticks are duds. So I'm with Sweden or Finland or wherever it was.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, so I talked a lot about it at work, and flew down on Friday evening. I was affected by that fire in the City Tower too, so I was delayed, having had cancelled flights during all of the travel I've done to watch the Giants this season. I just said out loud to anyone who'd listen, as long as we take off before 11 o'clock, everything will be fine. And we did. So
I got the curfew.
There. Yep, exactly. Caught up with Kiwi. And what you didn't mention, Kiwi, is that we caught the Hawks intra-club match.
The VFLW team, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a busy day. Early morning out to, where was that?
Mulgrave.
So, and then we saw, I saw a little bit of AFL history, or VFL history. We went to what used to be called VFL Park, now is called Waverley Park. That's to the park itself. The oval is still there, but it's surrounded by apartments now.
And they've kept one piece of stand.
Yes, they have kept one piece of stand.
Which, great brekkie. Had they built more grandstand, would have had a higher capacity than the MCG, but it was the same time they were selling that off, they brought Etihad without realising the grain was going to grow so much.
You know, that's the demographic centre of Melbourne.
Out there.
So all of us that were sort of in the inner, Melbourne's inner north, like complain Parramatta. About going out there. Yeah, I Parramatta. Couldn't believe it when I heard that.
Right.
Well, we went to the cafe for lunch and we had to wait. It was packed. Cafe at the Hawthorne Club.
Because of the apartments around it?
Yeah, I think so. They just seem to be all locals, yeah.
Yeah, when I used to go out there, we used to go out, a mate of mine, his dad used to drive us out there to watch Hawthorn. They were Hawthorn supporters, and we'd drive all the way out there to Waverley. And then he would, and the outskirts were just paddocks that you parked in. There were no houses. There was nothing for kilometres. But he'd always, no matter what the score was, we had to leave with 5 minutes before the siren so we could run back down the stands across the park to get into his Porsche.
Oh,
and I was in the back behind the seats. You know that? No, la-di-da, because I was in that. There's not four seats or three seats. I was behind their two seats.
Oh,
and we'd have to leave before the rush. So we never got to see the end of a game at Waverley.
No.
But there was always time for me to just grab a little bag of doughies with donuts as we were going out the door.
You just had to hope that it hadn't been pouring rain and you got bogged at Waverley Park, which was a classic story out there.
They're shockers. I know. So now it's a different world out there. It's just metropolis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Houses all the way.
I just have to interrupt and say goodbye to our Adelaide listeners, because they informed us in the weekend they can only listen for 15 minutes because that's their car ride home or from work or to work or to school or anything.
Everything's
so,
close and like hand.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Brief cheerio.
Tune in next week.
You missed the wrap up of the grand final. Sorry, Adelaide.
This is Phoebe Monahan, and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
Well, just with your flight delays, I just want to shout out to Fernie McFernface. I'm not sure what her real name is. Fernie, like Fernie. How good was that story during the week?
Yeah, that was a good one.
That started my emotional roller coaster. That there's such good people in the world. Susan Alberti sending Fern, the number one ticket holder down at Collingwood. But really, she's number one ticket holder
and
at
business
every club,
class.
Isn't she?
She flew
and business.
Business class.
Yeah, business. I hope she got her money's worth.
We could have got two people over for that.
Imagine if they left from Sydney and didn't make the flight or something. Oh, I was panicking for
everyone. Put her in the walk-on bet for the cheer squads. So
she held everyone
embraced
the moment.
They really included her
in.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was gorgeous. Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
Well,
the
bit that really
footy,
got me, really got me in the heart was when Fern put on Twitter asking her twiblings, as I like to call us, all our brothers and sisters of Twitter, asking if her backpack, if we thought her backpack would be okay
well,
to carry on.
The thing that made me laugh is no one said, with that bloody
fine.
Collingwood badge on it. No, that's illegal, chuck it in the bin. That's what I thought someone would say, but everyone was very polite to Fern, so good on her. And good
start,
on Susan.
That was the start during the week of that community conversation, wasn't it? Not that the community conversation about women's football hasn't been had before, of course, but it seemed to really flow into the weekend. There was so much goodwill and so much conversation about it being a giant community.
So what about you, Em? What did you do in the week leading up? You had your photography
Other than whinging.
Yeah, you didn't get lunch.
Didn't
feed you at the function. Hired help, didn't get fed.
Cinder Barclay didn't need her salmon, so
she left
so
it
you
behind.
Sat down
so Emma
I
sat down at the end
I wolfed
and
down
that.
Cinder's salmon at the end.
Oh, God, that's a shocker.
No, look after the
food was
help.
Sensational, I've got to say.
Yeah. It was good, was it?
Yeah,
thanks,
it was
Trace.
Really good.
No, that's great. Cold salmon was pretty good, trust me.
Yeah.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
All I wanted to say was that come Sunday morning, I was nervous. I can't explain that. I mean, I was a player who'd get nervous before games, but that's different. You know, this is someone else's game of footy, but I was a bit nervous. I'm not sure why. Maybe there was something about women's footy on the big stage, a lot of people watching, you just want to make sure it goes right. But I remember Sunday cleaning.
I'm available next Sunday.
I was going to say, can you come to our house?
You know, if you
Fatima's in Portugal for 6 weeks.
I'll put the game on replay and you can just come and vacuum around it.
I needed to make sure the decks were clear. Everything was just ready to go so we could sit down and watch the footy. And it was. It was good.
Did you have a party?
Some food. Yeah, we had a little mini party.
Lovely.
My family, my parents actually have a history with the AFLM grand final of making sausage rolls, and my parents are good cooks, and so the day before they make literally about 250 sausage rolls. Not that we consume all those on the day, but whoever comes in, you know,
and they're welcome to come
rolls.
Over as
yeah.
Excellent.
I'll clean, they'll cook. So we did talk about sausage rolls, but we only remembered about half an hour before the game, so it was a little bit too late.
And you weren't going to leave.
We made garlic bread and we made pesto cheesy toast.
Done.
Oh,
perfect.
Very nice. I'm Ellie Brash and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
So we have found ourselves now talking about our experiences of the grand final itself, so let's do that. So Coach Kiwi and I flew to Adelaide and we stayed in Glenelg, not telling you where because we're going back there and we don't want everyone to know about it, but it's a gorgeous place. But speaking of nerves, we were a bit anxious because we had to get to Adelaide Oval by 8:30 because we were going to the Rainbow Crows breakfast that had only been advertised with 4 days' notice. Apparently it had only been organised in 4 days'
good on
time,
them.
So they did a really great job. I foolishly thought we could just catch the tram in and it would all be tickety-boo, but it was going to be an hour's trip and we just didn't have that time. So, yes, I was anxious just to get there and get sorted, but we went there. It was a great, great gathering, and that sense of community and atmosphere of acceptance was naturally part of the event anyway, because it also was the International Day of Trans Visibility. Have I said that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So there were panelists who were fantastic, but before I get into other parts of that, there were a few Carlton supporters, a couple of tables of Carlton supporters, but it was mostly Crows. And we all agreed that we'd all be positive about our discussions and our conversations leading up to the grand final. There was to be no sort of negativity, which really almost goes without saying in the AFLW experience, because it's just how everyone seems to behave.
In
a positive way, family-friendly,
supportive way,
inclusive way, which I guess we might talk about a bit later. I was a bit disturbed by the crowd there. It was such a large crowd, and it became obvious that there were AFLM supporters there because of how they were behaving. But we'll get to that a little later. Shout out to our new friends that we met at breakfast, Dan and Mel, who are new listeners to the pod.
Welcome.
Hello, Dan and Mel.
Oh, yeah, Dan and Mel might have gotten off their bus
by now. That's members number 12 and 13. Fantastic.
So the
special
Angela
Pippos, a car to give away for that, isn't there?
There a chance.
Panelists were Angela Pippos, Katrine Hillebrand,
South Australian minister,
Tanya Hosh, who's sex discrimination and inclusion person for the AFL.
Yep, and
someone else really important.
Yeah, Kate Jenkins, who's the Australian Sex Discrimination Commissioner.
What a fantastic lineup.
It was great. It was really good. Unfortunately, there were no questions from the floor, because if there had been, we would have been there all day.
There was no time, you mean, like, to do that?
We weren't.
What's the question you would have asked if you could have?
You heckled.
That's a change.
That's not a Yorkie.
What was your heckle, Kiwi?
They were talking about the host said he had questions, and one of his questions was, all right, we'll get on to, is there much sex discrimination in sport?
And we all went, oh.
And so me being me yelled out.
Can I just ask
Guy Richard from
Rainbow Crows.
So he had a list of questions that he gave. And so when he said that, I guess by then I couldn't hold back, and I was still waiting for coffee. So I just simply yelled out, well, have a look how many female head coaches there are for a start. So Tanya Hosk kind of went, what was that? Because the crowd heard me, and when I repeated it, she goes, well, I think you know I don't have to answer that question. So yeah, obviously it's been raised a few more times with her, so she's conscious of that kind of side of it as well. But she's quite a character. She's very, very interesting, and used a language that we probably don't use on this podcast, interesting.
Expressive.
Very, very expressive. She is herself.
Street cred.
And she does say that for her role, she's, I think, the only Indigenous female person at the AFL. So she just kind of says that for all the crap she gets, she's the only black fella in there fighting. So come and help me and fight and support and get behind us.
Join the fight.
So, kind of thing. It's pretty interesting.
As part of the event, there were a few video montages, and I just burst into tears. I can't remember what the – it was – was it a montage of
– there was a Kick Like a Girl campaign. So
yeah,
that was,
but I think it was –
was it something about a
highlights
girl
from previous years or something that. And it was – yeah, all of those emotions that were stirring in us all, I think, on that morning came out my eyes.
Oh, they had the This Girl Can, wasn't it, or something about a girl, and they asked all these kids.
Oh, run like a girl.
Yeah, how do you think a girl runs? And they videoed them, and then they spoke about it, little bits about that, how they're trying to break these campaigns to break stereotypes.
And there were some statistics that were presented about the point at which girls experience or sexism is usually the point of puberty. Mm-hmm. And so the drop-off rate is really quite stark between prepubescent girls and that. So between 10 and 13 is when they drop off, because...
Exactly, and 80%. The statistic, this is not a current statistic, and I would like to correct it, but I haven't got the data. But back in the day, in a previous life, I was involved in writing the school gender equity in school sport policy for Queensland, and the statistic at that time was that 80% of girls drop out of organised competitive sport by age 14 for exactly those reasons. Now, I don't know what the latest studies, and I feel that I need to get across that, because during the week I was involved in some questions from some youth girls coaches around participation rates for young women and the drop between under 14s to under 18s. I think we need to have a look at that, but it's not surprising, and it's been a perennial problem for exactly those reasons.
There's quite a stigma, isn't there, for girls, that age coming into high school and continuing to play sport, because I think a lot of girls played sport in primary school, and there was the issues around sort of gender lines just weren't there in the same way that they get established in high school. I'm not going to say they're not there at all, but it's different in high school. And I put that down to largely the fact that Girls get put in dresses when you get to high school so often. Some schools don't have uniforms, I know that, but many, many do. And I remember very clearly in primary school just kicking a footy or whatever, was kicking a soccer ball, anything, mostly with the boys, but you're just one of the kids kicking a ball around. And then in high school, I straight away tried to do that again with the boys. And, you know, I'm a reasonable kick and usually get accepted into these groups. And they just said, no, we can see your undies. And that was it. I was out after that, you know. And that's, I think, the experience. I've heard this from so many women and girls since, that the dress does just not allow you to kick a ball around. Mm. And I don't know why we persist with so many school policies around putting girls in dresses. Why do we dress on gender lines?
I think it's changing. I think they are actually trying to change it so that girls have a choice, either have a choice, or maybe they just are scrapping skirts and dresses all together for that very reason.
Squats.
Well, the old culottes in the cricket days. Anyone remember that?
Yeah, culottes. And a lot of the high schools, maybe not the private schools, but a lot of the high schools do have the unisex uniform. Basically, there's trousers, trackies, shorts, and all the kids have got a choice what to wear. Yeah. But you're right. When we were at school, I think we had the nuns coming around to measure the length of our netball skirt and things like that. You know, it's
Shout out to Hamilton High, Country Victoria, Emma Carney Land. Mm. Hamilton High had Fletch Jones slacks in the 70s, and I wore them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Go Hamilton High!
Yeah, very progressive indeed.
My name's Anine Zareka and you are listening to the Giants Woman Say.
So can we get to the game?
Yep.
Come on, let's talk the game.
Anticipation.
We've been building it up.
Amy Shark started and what a fantastic performance.
Did the crowd love her?
Yeah.
Because she seemed to be loving really nice it on the TV. She seemed to be
I nearly went
that
just
there.
To because Amy Shark was performing.
I tell you, before that though, they had a traditional Indigenous welcome. Which wasn't your normal.
It was televised.
I was.
Yeah,
oh, awesome.
The three girls, two
three
sisters.
Girls,
yes.
Yeah. So something really different. And I thought that was really awesome that they did it that way instead of, you know, the sort of more of a token sort of set line that most people use. But yeah, it was really.
I made a point that they didn't use the language I'm used to hearing. So obviously that was appropriate for exactly where we were, which is
there are more
great.
Than 200 in Aboriginal languages in Australia, still alive out of about 1,000.
And I just call them girls, but they're all probably at least teenagers, if not young women. So it might also be that there's an appropriate greeting that they offer as well at that age group as well. So I don't know.
It's very cool. I liked it.
Not often it's the traditional elders or the auntie so-and-so, isn't it? But, yeah, these young chicks are out there. It was great.
Yeah. Spoke really good.
Mm. Well, I caught the telecast just in time. And yeah, there were seven or eight of us gathered from our tipping competition to celebrate. And, yeah, we caught it from the beginning. So we're in Bondi. I would have loved to have been there. I loved 2 years ago when Stace and I caught up with you guys on the Gold Coast for a crowd of 15,000, which we thought at the time was most excellent and certainly exceeded the Victorian crowd last year. I'm just going to say right out, you could see, and you guys were there, so you experienced it, but you could see, you know, they'd be like, oh, they're opening the other tier and they're opening this and they're opening that. And, you know, to see the crowd of, 53,035.
It's my new tattoo. Do you like it?
Beverly Hills 53034.
Plus 1,000. How good was that? To have that many
amazing.
People watching chicks play footy. It was
new
so
record,
good.
Superseded the Optus Stadium, which was, you know, believed to be, that was a ticketed event, yes.
Yeah. Ticketed, yep.
So, you know, I think just, oh, my God. You know, I don't know what it was like, but I imagine it was very loud. And Adelaide Oval is a great arena.
Overwhelming. So that was the thing that really struck me whenever the Crows scored. The roar from the crowd just completely overwhelmed me. I had leaky eyes for a lot of the game, really.
Well, the start of the game, the noise was probably because Carlton got those frees that I think a lot of people didn't really understand. And I think this comes back to, I'm sure half that crowd were AFLM supporters, so they perhaps don't know the new rules or haven't copped on to the new rules. And later in the game, there was a whole lot of booing, which is what Fee was going to talk about.
I hate booing.
They actually booed the umpires at the presentation of their medals.
Yeah, that was wrong. She did say, you know, keep yourself knife, or I'm sure you'll give him a really loud cheer or something.
I was
there's been a lot of talk for the last few weeks about that booing.
They booed when they had the mat, they had the whole game in the bag. Yeah. And that was what I was saying to Kiwi. Why would you bother? Why bother booing at all, for starters? But why bother booing when you know it doesn't make any difference to your result for your team that you're supporting. And as you said, well, they're probably AFLM supporters.
Yeah, because I don't think AFLW and we don't hear the booing.
We've really enjoyed,
and we celebrate nature. Every moment, and you always want your own team to win.
Yeah, I've never gone off at an umpire in the AFLW. Yeah, you still
cheer the other team,
white maggot.
The umpires may make the odd mistake, but here was a young girl. I think it was one of the really young ones lining up for a shot at goal for Carlton. Crows were 8 points, 8 goals up. She got the free because the umpire had awarded it. It's not her fault, so why boo her? I just thought it was a bit sad. And there was really awesome moments where the crowd got behind and a lot of noise, but there were four times that a player went off with potential knee injury, the crowd went silent, absolute silence. And you just sort of heard the whole, oh, no, because it's been spoken about a lot. And then when Erin went off, it was just incredible that the whole crowd just stood and clapped.
That
it didn't
standing
matter
ovation was amazing.
What colour, what team you celebrated, you just got up for this athlete. And that the Carlton players went to her, it was incredible.
I love watching that, actually, on the telecast. You'd see the players come over just to
pat her. Are you crying now?
Yep. She's very emotional.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Often you'll get your teammate come over or, maybe a co-captain or something like that. But I described it almost like a guard of honour. She was chaired off, Romanesque style, walked off and the crowds were, it was unbelievable. And I think I didn't realise, but you said that she'd sucked on the little pethidine green stick.
Yeah,
it was
on
so
telly.
I had missed that. I might have been wiping my own tears at that time. In fact, that moment almost sort of ruined the game for me.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Because it was a bit like I was really flat from that moment onwards. I really loved that moment of her being carted off, and anyone who was within the vicinity were up. And I think the driver of the van sort of went, "Oh, geez, you're popular, love," But
it
was
kept slowing down. It was really nice.
Yeah, he didn't want to run over anyone else. I don't think we've got enough for injuries. It was it was pretty amazing. And it's also sort of part of, I know anytime, we've played in grand finals or whatever, you don't want anyone injured because they can't enjoy that day, that night, that moment as well.
And I think that's possibly prevented her flying to Melbourne for the W Awards.
That or she was just really drunk.
Yeah. I think that was Chelsea was the flight.
Yeah. She could have driven. It's only 6 hours, 8 hours.
Yeah. No, driving. So, it and on top of all the others, Stevie Lee really hurt her ankle, but got back on the paddock and got
so
to run around.
Yeah, so we thought that was a knee at the time, but it was an ankle. And
Shea, young, Shea, after the specky.
After that,
she had the big
ride.
That mark was sensational.
That was,
they
were on a roll.
We
there,
replayed
they?
That a couple of times on the telly. Just to have another look because a couple of people had missed it. And we'll rewind it.
It was unbelievable.
And then Taylor Harris and Bree Davey collided and we –
because it was the very opening bounce of the third quarter. After being pummeled, obviously they've gone into the change rooms and the big chat, and I heard Daniel Hartford afterwards saying that they wanted to get Taylor into the game because she really looked very flat.
They moved Taylor and Darcy into the midfield.
Got them into the centre, tried to get them get the ball, and then that initial knee clash straight up, and it just shut her down for the rest of the game. Really, I don't think – I didn't even look at the stats.
She was in agony. I watched her warm up, and I thought her warm up, she looked a little bit off.
This is Harris you're talking about.
Yeah, Taylor Harris, yeah. And – because Carlton were down our end for the warm-up. And so, just have a little peek. And she was missing some shots, absolutely shanking her kick. And instead of then getting it back and brushing it off, her head was dropping then.
Could it be nerves or a bit of anxiety around the game?
But she's been in a grand final before as well. Mm. And I thought, that's a little bit worrying. I thought it was worrying. And then at the end of the first quarter, I was sitting with another lady from Darabin who knows a little bit about Taylor, but the wellness officer for Carlton is from Darabin, so we know her really well. And at the end of the first quarter, we were watching Taylor come off and she was in tears. She actually was really uncomfortable and didn't go with the rest of the team when they went into the huddle. So we're standing there going, JC, get over, talk to her, get over. Go do your job. That clearly he's a player in distress. But she went and saw a trainer and got some strapping and it looked like her calf got strapped after a while, but that's not what they were looking at the time. So I think she's had a few things not go her
straight
way.
Straight up, she looked, I think I even sort of said, Taylor's out of sorts. She, Hart wasn't in it, it seemed, at the beginning. But Hartford reckons it was just the knee from half time onwards. But no, there was definitely something, wasn't there? There was something she was out. Whether the emotional roller coaster of the weeks.
When I was at GWS, that the conversations between welfare psychologists and coaching staff had identified and I would imagine this would be across the playing groups at other teams, that the anxiety among players, and I think it's all the things we've talked about throughout the pod, which are all the things about the short season and the performance, you know, you've got to perform week in, week out, all of that, and the, you know, balancing your life and all the things that come with being an AFLW part-time elite sports person, that the anxiety levels among the players generally far exceeded those of the men. And that's not a surprise, but, you know, despite being in a grand final, I mean, if you think about Taylor's lead up, she rode the highs and lows of all of that trolling on social media and then the highs of the response to that. It's probably, you know, I'm no psychologist, but it's probably no surprise that, you know, the ebbs and flows of that mentally, you know, and what it took out of her, you know, may have made it hard to kind of, you know, there's a lot of expectation, a lot of concentration on Taylor, a lot of emphasis on her as a key player in the side. So, yeah, I think you know, the week that led up to that probably took its toll.
Plus she was marked early on by Chelsea Randall.
Oh, look, and Chelsea Randall she, outside of Erin, I'd say she's, you know, the elite or one of the top five players in the competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you get Chelsea Randall, you've got to play at your absolute best.
You wouldn't have known that she was picking up Taylor, because Chelsea just floated across and intercepted so many attacks. Because Carlton
everywhere.
They came out of the blocks. Carlton were on song at the beginning. Missed a couple of shots. And yes, I know Press Parker's got the 50 to give her the first goal and stuff, but they were creating opportunities. They were inside 50, you're right. But then Chelsea just repelled so many attacks. She was just incredible, wasn't she?
I thought she was going to get best on ground.
Yeah,
I thought she stopped a whole lot.
No, I had 20 bucks on her too.
Foley, Jess Foley was my pick for best on ground. If Foley had kicked her two goals, she was playing that the giant ruck who then floats down and kick, you know, creates opportunities down forward. She didn't stop running, picked up, I think, 18 possessions, and I think the fact that she didn't kick those two goals maybe was the thing that stopped. But she did it for four quarters. Erin for three, and then she went and rested on the bench.
Yeah,
not to take away from Erin's performance. Oh, look, she's still picked up 8 possessions. I know you said in one of your tweets or texts, Erin hasn't touched the ball, but she had. She was leading possession getter at that stage. You just don't notice her.
I think you can't take away from what she did do, Erin, because she is, like, I don't think there's anyone here who disagrees. She is an outstanding and probably the most outstanding athlete in the competition, there's no doubt.
Yes.
But I believe that, you know, I 18 touches and 2 goals in 3 quarters is a fantastic achievement. But I think there were a couple of other players who certainly should have been in the mix. And, you know, it is what it is.
Was there a breakdown of points? I didn't see any sort of
nothing publicised in terms of votes.
Anne Hatchard actually had the most number of touches. Not that I'm any fan of picking players for best on for the number of touches they have, because it's what they do with them. But Chelsea Randall, for me, was the best on ground. You know, she just dominated down there. She was the military officer down there and absolutely set them up, you know, leading, running out of defence, and gave those mids the feed they needed to get those touches. Mm. I think Erin was amazing, but I'm not sure that wasn't a little bit of a charity.
You were calling her flying Chelsea, weren't you?
Yeah, calling her flying Chelsea. I thought she was incredible.
She's
through the air.
Yeah,
and if she couldn't,
like on a little spring, boing, back
if she
up again.
Take
and
the
just
mark,
keeps going.
She would just fling a hand out just enough to spoil. And I don't think
her spoiling ability. I watched a couple of those low balls coming in. Her ability to get her arm around
and
the
not
opposition,
give away the free
not
kick,
give away the 50, and to still make perfect contact with the ball. Yeah. Like, it's second to none in the women's competition.
Yeah, one of the finest footballers I've seen.
When Erin went off, she was the highest possession getter at the time, and by the end of the game she's fifth overall.
Still. Yeah, look, just looking at the stats, the second quarter for Adelaide just won the game.
Yep,
7-2 they kicked. 6-2 they kicked. And then for the rest of the game, second half of the game, they only kicked 1-1. So Carlton still had an opportunity, and the opening bounce and Brian Taylor clashing knees, they both wanted the ball, they were going to lead on and do it, and they just friggin' bloody slammed into each other. And I think that was almost like, oh, that's it. But they really could have, but they only kicked 2 points in the second half themselves. There was half a game still to play. But
just on the back of that, Nat, on stats, Carlton actually had 28 forward entries to Adelaide's 24. Mm. 28 to 24, mm-hmm. they had more. Their disposal efficiency, however, Carlton, was 32%, inside 50 this is, to 71% efficiency Adelaide.
So a huge difference.
There's your difference, really. Mm. Now, I mean, you can put that down to a number of factors. Perhaps the Adelaide mids forced the Carlton mids to kick wide to their forwards. Perhaps the defenders were so good at crowding space in the forward line, they pushed the forwards wide. So their shots on goal were from spots that were not much chop. All kinds of reasons. But
I reckon Carlton it's an interesting stat. Bombing. They bombed it in a lot and Chelsea was
under pressure and panicky.
Well, I think they bombed it in, looking for the lower high fly from Taylor. And, you're playing against an opposition of Chelsea Randall. You've got to deliver the ball in a different way and they needed to lower their eyes and look at other options. But you're right, Nat, they had opportunities. It wasn't over at half time, even though the score had started to creep. And losing Erin was another opportunity in a way because she's so dominant. But I guess just to pick it up and to go with it. I was a bit like you after Erin came off. The game was really flat and it was, there wasn't much scoring, happening in that last quarter and a half. So I don't know from a perspective of being there, but I think it really slowed down. I was like, okay, well, it's a bit of a foregone conclusion and we're going to, just ride it out until it ends.
Bree Davey was the only one who probably could hold their head up for Carlton, I thought. She was
amazing. Game. It was a great game.
She was certainly their best and really tried to instigate and create opportunities. She just didn't have the support around her from senior players, young players. Poor old Maddie, I think, she was exhausted, I think, after the season she's had, Press Parkers. But, not a lot could hold their heads up, I don't think. Their ruck, Downey and Dalton, the ones who'd been brilliant the week before, they just didn't touch the ball hardly.
Yeah, what I noticed is the Carlton forward line seemed to play with Darcy and Taylor quite high up the field as well. And a lot of times when they were bringing the ball down and kicking into their 50, they didn't anyone to kick to. And Bree Moody has been a target in other games, but she really wasn't taking anything at all. I don't know if she even took many marks at all by the end of the game. But just, even I felt she was pushing right up towards the 50. And if you want a tall target, want them a bit deeper than
that. I think they brought them up to try and get them into the game, but, the result of that is that they turn and go and there's not much there. Yeah. So it's that balance, isn't it? What do you sacrifice to win the ball and then what do you do with it when you get inside 50, which is what happened. It broke down there.
Because there was some part of the game where I saw it looked like Darcy was on the half back line and they were bringing the ball up and they were chipping it over. And I thought, if anyone's going to snap a goal for Carlton, she's the player that will do it. She can do it from any angle and could have just given that little bit of an edge for them and, change it up a little bit. But she was sitting, way back at half back. So they just lacked somebody up there who was going to just inspire them, I think, a little bit. And
I think we all just fell for the trap of wanting a close game. And on paper and over the last 7 weeks, Adelaide were going to win it pants down easily, weren't they? But we just wanted to be closer, wanted Carlton to be better. And they were on the improve, but you were right. You'd pick 36 points, Emma, before the match as a margin, and it was certainly more than that as well. I think we all hoped it wasn't going to be that. But
my heart wanted otherwise.
Yeah, and I think we all did. I mean, everyone loves a close game. It's a good game, as the saying goes. But it will be memorable for so many other reasons than the result and the margin.
It's interesting hearing the two of you talk about after Erin was injured how flat the game got. And I experienced the same thing, but maybe not quite the sadness that you're talking about, because it felt to me like we'd witnessed a moment in sport that was extraordinary. And the crowd rising and those Carlton players and everyone going over to her and just the look on her face. And we all sort of knew what was going on, the 53,000 people there. And you could feel another turning point, I think, for women's sport. And I think about the Taylor Harris photograph, the kick and the photo, of course, that ensued and what came from that. And I want to go back a little bit further, and I don't know if this is drawing too long a bow, but the Me Too movement was an absolute watershed moment for women. And I think from there have been a number of dominoes, the domino effect has happened. And we feel like we're watching sort of watershed moment after watershed moment now, or at least fairly monumental moments. And that, I think, is the result of that. Women now feel empowered to speak, that the people are listening, the media is listening, people are consuming the game, they're going in great droves, and to watch Erin go down was just this, really, I don't want to diminish it, but a piece of theatre that nobody expected that then got pasted all over newspapers everywhere and everybody's talking about it. And, she's one of the greatest athletes we've seen for a long time, the chariot ride, so there's so much to come out of it that's just we use this word a lot, but it is amazing. It's an amazing time.
Yeah, that and the crowd numbers, you know, creating history. Just around the grounds, do we think she'll come back and play another season?
She has said she wants indicated to.
I think she will.
I wouldn't put it past her.
We threw it open to a bet in our small grouping of about eight, and it was 50% said, yeah, definitely, and 50% said, nah. So,
and you, Trace?
I said, definitely. I just feel
she
like.
She doesn't want to end like
I feel like, you know, she is an elite athlete, and I know that as you get older, it's much harder to recover from a major injury, but she's got a lot more to offer. I think she thinks she does as well. I think she loves her footy, and I do think she'll be back.
You don't think it's an opportunity for her to obviously recover and get fit and healthy again, but perhaps be a coach?
Well, I mean, she's been coaching in basketball in the US, so exactly. I mean, she has those credentials, and I think she'll end up in a pathway there, but I reckon she'll be back, and I reckon she'll give us another 2 years.
She already does some coaching. She's working with the Australian Academy Youth Girls. Look, I just want to say also about the game is the second quarter being there, you kind of were conscious Adelaide were banging in a bunch of goals and there were some ripper goals. But the second half, even though there weren't so many scores, the tackles and the marks and some of the play.
Smothers. The I wrote smothers, down, there were so many smothers.
So many smothers.
They were desperate.
And you know, I just felt that the Carlton defence was just too small and they were outbodied almost every time the ball came in. And it's probably why Adelaide did so much better. But if you looked at the score, it really is only eight scoring shots to 13. Mm-hmm. So it's not a complete walkover that some people think. I think the game itself was a lot closer than perhaps the scoreboard is showing. But
Adelaide's accuracy
But the whole game was, you know, you were still in there watching every tackle, every mark, every smother. It was, you know, sure sad Aaron had left and you kind of hoped no one else was going to leave the field in a similar way. But I think, yeah, the game was interesting right throughout.
Mm. I've always had a hatred of the Adelaide Football Club.
I'm a Giants fan, but...
Sorry, back to Emma's whinge corner.
Sorry, back to... I am in strife, I know, with this now. I think it's their chip on their shoulder about Victorians or something like that, and their song with the whole pride of South Australia and all that sort of stuff, you know. Port Adelaide's there as well now. But watching the Crows play in the grand final on Sunday, it was just so lovely. You know, from the sports fan in me was just in raptures watching it. And I want to see more of them. You know, I've never had that experience with anything to do with the Adelaide Football Club I've run away from. But I want to watch these guys play. They're great.
Well, I've got to say the other thing, and they had expressed it in after the game on Friday night, but the players in the AFL-M had sincerely committed to being at the game and behind the women, and they were there, and I saw them on the telly, and you guys probably saw them in person.
We walked into the bar and they were drinking it.
You know, it was a whole club approach to supporting, and you know, the likes of Eddie Betts have always been right behind their program, and the fact that half of their players come from the Northern Territory, I mean, it kind of belies the theory that local product can compete with Victorian product. And I think, you know, that's a great news story for women's football in and of itself.
Because Ebony Marinoff, even though she had a year at Darebin, she is a South Australian. So there's a few real key players, and Danielle Ponter, and, you know, we love Chelsea, but she may go back to Eagles, she may not. But, yeah, there's some really talented South Australians there.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they played in the VFLW, as Northern Territory Thunder, and the fact that they've been able to build a culture and sustain their, you know, maintain and sustain a core key playing group, and perform at the very best in 2 of 3 years, is outstanding. Like, it's an outstanding achievement for a non-Victorian based club. And yes, they're in a footy heartland, but they're still a non-Victorian based club.
Trace, do you think there are lessons there for New South Wales footy?
Yeah, I do actually. I mean, I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I think that, you know, an investment in your local product, as Queensland have, and the Lions made 2 grand finals as well, investment in local product is showing that you'll reap the rewards.
Hi, this is Erin McKinnon and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
So as we know, the Giants fell far short of the grand final this year. So let's discuss where we think the Giants need to go from here? So we don't know who they're going to retain.
No.
We tried and tried and tried to get Cora to tell us, but she wouldn't.
She was pretty tight-lipped
after a beer. I think the players will keep it fairly close to their heart. I think there's a couple of interesting points to make. So if you look at the model, we just talked about South Australia and Queensland investing heavily in their local product. Well, South Australia with Northern Territory. And there is something definitely to look at there. I mean, Queensland are going to be, the Lions are going to sort of be pillaged by the Gold Coast potentially. So that's going to be really interesting. But I know that both of those clubs have a genuine commitment to developing local product. And the Lions have shown that over and over again with only a handful of Victorian and or West Australian product, a couple of Tassies, I think. And the Gold Coast, as I understand it, are also committed to local product. So that's a really interesting approach, as is the Northern Territory South Australian experience, which is really quite on an opposite spectrum to what's happening in Sydney with the Giants. So after a lot of local product in season one, or a more dominant local product, it was very much a Giants focus to recruit Victorian product especially, and WA product, and more recent times Adelaide product to the game. I honestly believe that we have product in New South Wales that's not being discovered and it's not being nurtured. And the reason for that is that we don't have any genuine academy program. So we have the Swans Academy program, which is building the future players for both teams really into the future. So at the moment, you know, sort of under 12s, under 13s, under 14s, under 15s, still a few years off having, you know, mature age. But there's been no development apart from a small train on squad of 10 for the local competition. And I think that the Giants, I understand the requirement to try to bring in some key positional and experienced players, but there's got to be more investment locally. And I think there's a belief that the talent's not there, but I would challenge that.
Do you think that belief that the talent's not there is what actually prevents anyone from setting up those programs? There's a general culture of, it's not here, we need to look elsewhere, we're not really going to set it up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why the Giants have not thought about a women's academy, whether they think that the Swans are doing the heavy lifting for that part of, aspect of the program. And the Giants, through the winter series, have done some great work with other local players identified right across the state. I just think there's some amazing examples of that South Australian, Northern Territory and Queensland connections. And I know from history that, you know, in the New South Wales context, we've not been far behind those states in terms of development in the past. So it's, you know, we've still got the bleed to Victoria for the VFLW, despite the Giants playing an invitational series of 5 games in the VFLW. I know personally of a number of players who are looking to go, and a number of players who would have hopefully been retained who are still taking their opportunity in Victoria for a whole raft of reasons. So it's really interesting. I don't know the answer, but I think it's going to require greater investment in local and New South Wales talent to lift it and to really build the culture that's not, you know, with the thing we've talked about before, which is that sort of dad's army of misfits, which is a self-deprecating kind of low expectation, I think, that
I really don't like that one little bit. And a lot of people actually don't know what dad's army is. I said to you a couple of people.
I don't think the players would have a clue.
Do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
I don't know this one.
Yeah. But I don't think the players understand that reference.
Can we go back to John Farnham? I'm comfortable there.
Doddering old fools, bumbling around, thinking they're doing something decent and actually just making fools of themselves. And so I take it really personally when my local team is described in that manner. They're not misfits. They're professional football players. Yeah. Treat them like that and call them that, please.
I don't think I'd known that was their descriptor they'd given themselves until you'd all brought it up. So I wasn't aware of it outside of the inner sanctum, I guess.
They called themselves that, did they?
Yeah.
They still refer to themselves. If you enter
Misfits and we're Dad's Army.
Dad's Army. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's Alan, you know, he has that look of the old, dottery old man, doesn't he? But maybe using that as well, I don't be rude. Maybe I just have been, judging by your reactions.
No, that's good, Nat. Keep going.
And so what I think about why the players go to the VFL for the games is you're getting a full season. So you get 16 rounds down there before finals. Every game is videoed, sometimes from two angles. So each week, and this is across all VFL teams, and we actually do it with our under-18s and our under-16s who get five games in their season. So this is what Victoria are doing. You video, you sit down with your players, you show them some key points of what they did in the game. You might discuss your line structure and what worked, what didn't work. Champion data can then get uploaded, so you can then pick out that player, all her leads or all her kicks or all her spoils, whatever you want to work on. And then each week you can compare your stats and work. And each team has got your wellness, you've got your psychologists, you've got your strength conditioning coaches, dietitians. You get that for a season, and that's just making you stronger, better footballers for then the next little teeny tiny seven-round AFLW season.
Yeah, it's a much richer, deeper professional development experience, because the players that stay here for the Giants will go back to, and this is a sad thing for AFL Sydney, and I think, Fee, that you wanted to sort of reference that, but the sad thing for AFL Sydney is the competition is diminished by the fact that players are going back to Victoria. So by not having those players in the clubs, the competition here is actually weaker, and people are not being selected because people can't see the players playing at the level that they need to be playing at in order to be selected. So it's like a catch 22.
Well, they also can't see them if they don't show up to the games, Trace.
Well, that's also true. And I think the other thing is that the clubs here, for all their best endeavours, have nowhere near the support the Victorian clubs have. So there is no data, you know. So the Giants will have data for their five or six games, but there is no data. There's no, you know, there's very rarely a strength and conditioning coach. Some clubs will have some part-time strength and conditioning. I think I'm correct in saying AFL Sydney is now videoing all women's games, women's Premier Division games this season. However, no club that I know of has any ability to dissect that data. So there's no, so that, you know, nobody's got sports code or providing a coach with a computer or a Mac, which you need a Mac in order to use sports code or other.
Or a theatre space to put your
players in. Or a theatre space to show them or anything, you know. So the problem that, you know, the comparison is vast. It's not a simple little thing. It actually requires an investment from, you know, the AFL and Sydney AFL, like a combination, to invest in the local league so that it is, because South Australia very cleverly came up with their Sandful competition that runs in the, alongside the AFLW, which is a very strong league because it takes the best of the best, and they have a full coaching program with full coaching teams, fully funded, everything. So, you know, it's really difficult for New South Wales to compete with that. And until we build the infrastructure and until the AFL clubs that are based here or, you know, Giants and into the future Swans demand that of AFL Sydney and of what's going to happen here, I can just see that we're not going to get that improvement. It's not going to happen quickly.
Do you think there's an issue for government as well? There might be some shared responsibility between AFL Sydney and the government to provide resources and facilities where they're needed?
Yeah, look, I think it needs an overall, you know, so shout out to New South Wales Sports Commission or whatever we called, Department of Sport, New South Wales. I think...
Tag him in, Fee.
Yeah, so there's no...
I will.
There's no... you know, I don't know what the plan is, and AFL is the fastest growing. It's the fastest growing sector in the entire sports community, female participation in AFL. But we don't have the ovals, we don't have the grounds. You know, our experience, Em, at UNSW, for all of the great work in supporting their women's AFL program. You know, we're still, what, we have 56 at training on half the oval. We never trained. We trained on a full ground oval for the last three premierships towards the end of the season in the final series when we booked Henson out for a training session. To win three premierships without ever training on a full ground oval was like a, you know, quite a feat. You know, so I think, you know, that this is the reality of the teams here, and the infrastructure's not there, you know, from a physical infrastructure to the club infrastructure to, I don't know, it's just so far behind. I don't know how we invest in it and pick, you know, lift it.
And you can understand then if that's a situation, the good players who want to give themselves the best opportunity of playing in the AFLW, they're going to jump on a plane and take their studies and, you know, their life to Melbourne to give themselves the best opportunity, because they can't see themselves getting, you know, not an easy pathway, but, you know, doing it at home here.
Well, they're
Sydney.
Not going to be seen because no. Nobody's at games, and we're only starting to record the games, and even the quality of the games are so, you know, they are – a lesser quality than the games in the VFLW. So coaches you can't really judge. You can't compare how someone looks in a game X in Sydney AFL compared to a VFLW game. And so to see those players, the only time you get to see them, which is the importance of, I guess, the Giants playing five invitational games, is that team, whoever's in it, and there will be people who are not currently AFLW signed players, will get an opportunity to show what they can do against the best in the country. But it's kind of like a small aspect of the entire big picture, which requires effort from so many levels that it, you know.
So do you think the Giants should put a team in permanently like Adelaide have done under the Northern Thunder?
I think they wanted to, but it's just, you know, they didn't have the $40,000 to do it, and then the cost to fly and create a full coaching staff and program to go with it.
Being part of Darabin last year, being that we're not an AFL club, is really interesting to see how they run against the AFL clubs, because, like you say, the license, I think the license is $30,000 to buy into the VFL. So, and the new rule now is that the players of VFL level are not allowed to play registration fee. So for a community club like Darabin, there's your $30,000 straight up. So that was out. And also they had to then move the training field that they trained at. So they borrow Northcote Park from the Northcote team because that's VFL standard. So Darabin don't have a VFL men's team. So they have these extra challenges. And for the funding, I think they said something cost something close to $100,000 to run the team last year. So, you know, we only have one full-time staff member, and she does work a lot. And then, you know, conditioning coaches and things, it's a lot of money. And this year it's going to probably cost even a little bit more. And we don't have – Darabin don't have their own gymnasium, so they've got to deal with Northcote Sports YMCA Centre. So that's where they use the gymnasium. They've got 12-month memberships. They've got a pool facility. So that's they're trying to be as competitive as they can. And being that the the Victorian government is giving funding to women's sports, they've picked up something like a $320,000 grant to go towards the VFL program. So that's their way of getting, you know, behind, you know, putting the money into their program to compete with AFL clubs. And then, you know, there are sports clubs that have got four codes. So they've got to then justify why the VFL team gets all this money, not the soccer team, not the cricket team. So, you know, there's a lot of work done inside the club and fundraising and things like that. So it's huge what happens.
And I hate to raise North Melbourne again. I'm sorry. I don't know a
Just
lot about them.
Just don't say muggers.
I don't care enough.
I reckon we could do pod bingo. You say muggers, tick. I say ace, tick.
You say Collingwood.
Fee says gunner. Well, I think that's actually stopped now.
No, go back to North Melbourne.
I was
Melbourne.
Just thinking about when they redeveloped Arden Street, and they're doing it again at the moment, but that first significant redevelopment couldn't have gone ahead without the support of Melbourne City Council, and they're all over it. So they've got their own – there are two gyms actually there. There's the players' gym, of course, and there's a public gym, and I think access to the pool and things like that. So, you know, members of the public can sign up at the gym within the North Melbourne Footy Club. Now, obviously, that's a really good way to strike up a deal for improving facilities in a footy club space. And I'm thinking, going back to Trace, what you were saying about lack of resources, lack of interest in building resources, it seems, and facilities. It just, when you say that the women's footy is the biggest growth of any sport. I don't know whether we can even say ever in Australia, maybe, in such a short space of time anyway. Is that not a clarion call for government, you know, for footy clubs to say, we just have to pull our finger out right now. We have to get the best leaders around and say, how do we get this fixed up? ASAP, right now, we've got to sort this out. We've got to talk to councils. We've got to talk to, you know, state government if it is, to get involved in the same way that maybe some of those Victorian AFL clubs have. And I speak of the Victorian ones because I know them. I'm sure there are others doing it outside of Victoria, but these are the ones I know. You know, what has to happen? Is it leadership? What do you think?
I think it's at every level. So I think it's leadership. But I just think we're starting from such a point that's so far behind, you know, so the other traditional states and even Queensland, because of the heavy investment they've had in women's football since 2011 or 2013 especially. But I think, yeah, I don't know why it's lacking, Em, and it's hard to watch. And I don't know, yeah, really don't know the answer. I just know we've got a long way to go, and any small steps towards improving that will be great. But I'm still not seeing them. I'm not seeing them from the AFL AFL Sydney commitment, AFL New South Wales ACT, and the funding provided by the AFL. At the lunch the other day, they talked about the huge number of dollars invested into the Giants and the Suns from the AFL. I'm not seeing that level of investment in the AFLW to lift the standard. We talked a lot pre this pod about gold coin donations at games and how that could be invested into community football. But it's so far to go. I mean, even at our old club level, I wanted to ask the question, can you please provide for me a spreadsheet of the investment from registration from female players, at which at that point we had 76 registered players at the Bulldogs, and the comparative expenditure per registrant on men's and women's football. And even at a club that is strongly committed to AFL women's football, I think you'd find that the investment per capita and per registration would be much lower. And, you know, so we need administrators to look at that. We need clubs to look at that. We need the AFL and the governing bodies to look at it. We need councils. We need state governments. It's just such a – I don't think people understand the situation. Maybe we're bringing it to people's attention today.
Well, I think didn't Scott Morrison say something about if he was re-elected, they were going to put some funding towards female sports facilities?
Yep, squillions and billions.
Which when I heard that, I was like, you're a bit late because...
Well, that's the end of that then.
The Victorian government have already been doing this for the last few years. So, you know, if you go to a lot of fields in Victoria, they've either started work on them or there's plans for work to be done to redevelop, especially the change rooms and toilet area.
I think you're looking at two very different situations though, because in Victoria the grounds are owned by the clubs, and so that investment in their own infrastructure. But in Sydney, the grounds are principally owned by the council and by other groups. So there are very few clubs who actually own their own ground and can have their own home facilities, for example, where they, you know, they can get the income from their own cafe or restaurant or pokies or whatever the revenue in way of getting revenue is. Whereas in Victoria, because of the long tradition in AFL, the grounds are owned by the actual clubs, and there's a plethora of grounds because every school has a ground, so even the growth in Victoria has outstripped, you know, the demand for ovals in Victoria is so high that they're worried about grounds. So imagine what that's like in New South Wales. It's an entirely different kettle of fish.
Yeah. I was speaking to actually Marjorie O'Neill, who just got the seat of Coogee at the state election. I happened to run into her when I voted, and she and I had a really good chat because she has a long history of playing rugby and coaching women's rugby. And she was fervently telling me how crappy the situation is here with grounds particularly and with lighting. So in that Coogee, in that eastern suburbs area where there are a lot of oval, a lot of space, a lot of grass really, but the lights shut off really early. So men's or women's can't get onto these spaces. You know, I think I get the impression she's going to go in there and bang her fist on a few tables and hopefully open some doors and have some good conversations. But we need more like her, don't we? Just thinking about the Swans, Trace, you know, they're the biggest footy club in Sydney. They have the fans, they have the following. Is there something that they might have done, you know, 2, 3, 5, 7 years ago perhaps? I know they talk about lack of grounds, lack of facilities too, and that's probably fair enough. But given their stature here, might they have pushed a bit more and led the others to this party?
Yeah, I think they definitely could have, and I know their fan base desperately wants an AFLW side. The reality is, and this is as I understand it, so I agree, they were in a position of power and they could have really influenced the environment. But at Moore Park, they didn't have enough offices for their own staff. The academy staff are not based in the Swans offices, so they didn't actually have enough. They've way outgrown their gym, their pool, which is why the precinct to take over the Royal Hall of Industries and all of that piece. So when I spoke to them over 2 years ago, they were looking for new facilities. So they had two angles. One angle was that they didn't believe that they could adequately support a team at the elite level. And they were very conscious that they wanted to prepare players because they didn't want to be a quasi-community league team in an elite competition. Mm-hmm. So they had two angles for that. And, you know, to give them credit, you know, they started the academy and working through. But to your point, you know, there were other options. I mean, there are other places like Henson Park that could have been redeveloped. You know, there could have been interim arrangements while they got there, because I think the desire of people to play for the Swans, and, you know, because of the name, the brand, you know, the positive. The
beautiful jerseys.
Yeah. I think it would have been proximity to our houses. All of those things. Exactly. So I think, yeah, look, I lament that they're not in there, because I think it would really help the New South Wales landscape. But I also understand why they didn't move forward at the time that they did. Mm. And for whatever those decisions, you know, whoever made those decisions, I guess, while it's disappointing from a fan base and from a women's football side of things, they did have very good reasons, and they're very committed to a women's team. I think when they do come in, my issue will be how will the 14-team competition go, and how long will they make the other four sit out? You know, they're very hopeful to be in 2022. I'm a bit nervous about
that. Maybe. So has that date been set?
No, so they haven't put in application, but the word and the commitment that I keep hearing is 2022. But that's, of course, contingent on the fact that the AFL will then say, yes, the remaining four or two or one or whoever gets a licence will be given a licence. And because of the, you know, all the argy-bargy over conferences and timing and all of that, and also the conversation that's already started around depth of talent, I don't know. I mean, I'm hopeful. I think it'd be fantastic.
Speaking of expansion, I don't know if any of you caught Gil McLachlan speaking after the grand final on Sunday. In his usual flat, non-emotional, doesn't give anything away kind of way. I think he's afraid of being caught out saying something he doesn't want to. He really intimated that there'd be a longer season next year. That's what I read from that, that there was enough. I think the crowd maybe on Sunday tipped him over to feeling like there was enough confidence. They could have enough confidence in the competition. There's enough support for it to be have games sitting alongside AFLM games. There was he didn't say it directly, but I definitely drew that from it.
But I think they have to extend it anyway, because they're going to stay with the two conferences by the sounds of it. So you've got two extra teams in each of those. So there's another two rounds they've got to fit in. The tennis has also been extended. So they've always been cautious about playing at the same time as the Australian Open. So
I think that's ridiculous, because AFLW demands of itself its own audience. And tennis is only played in Melbourne, while AFLW is played all over the country. And with clever scheduling, they could absolutely. The tennis is not a problem for crowds.
But yeah, we end up clashing with the soccer anyway.
Oh, well, yeah, like our game in Sydney was at exactly the same time as the Matildas were playing. So,
that's a clash.
That's a genuine clash of the same audience.
Yeah. Well, I think they should be more worried about clashing games with the men's game. Because you're already football fans, and I've already heard them say, oh, I don't know if I go to the men's this week or the women's, I'll probably go to the men's. So fans are already being torn when there is that overlap. Whereas if you bump the season forward, you either stay home at night and watch the tennis and go to the football in the daytime, it's much more of a better marriage. So Yeah, I think if they bump it a little bit earlier, the girls are used to playing in the hot days and hard grounds and cope with those injuries on their poor salaries. Ideal. So,
but
you know.
Ultimately, it's ultimately got to go quite significantly longer than it has, doesn't it? Once all the teams are in, it's got to go a lot longer.
It's got to be a home and away season once a team's in.
You know, there's always that call to, I'm sure we've spoken about it, but for reducing the men's season. And well before AFLW was established, there was a lot of talk about reducing the men's season anyway. It's 23 games plus finals. It's a long season and really hard on the body.
That comes down to money because some of those games,
what a surprise.
Just the number of
and broadcasting rights.
And that's what it comes down to.
Mm. Absolutely.
They can't afford to lose that revenue now it's set up that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they probably won't have a full winter season for women until there's a good lower level as well because they don't want to lose what the sample have or VFL have. Whereas at the moment, the men, still very quality, high-quality VFL competition that the AFL players, they can drop down to. So if they at the moment look at, say, your VFLW, all the good players playing AFLW would make that comp a whole lot less better quality. Mm. So I think they'll probably wait until there's, you know, enough players to fill both before they run them side by side.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Mm.
Hi, this is Yvonne Bonner and you're listening to Giants Women's Day.
We're going to move on, but there was something I meant to say earlier just regarding the grand final because there was a bit of chitter-chatter in the Twitterverse about the fact that it was free and so maybe that accounted for the numbers. So I did a few sums and I've worked out that, yes, of course it was free, but for two of us to get to the grand final – with flights, accommodation and travel to and from, and we actually haven't made it home yet. We've come straight from the airport to here. $1,300. That's what it costs.
So a ticket on top of that, is like chicken scratchings, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
We're not asking for $500 tickets. It's not AFLM, you know, grand final. So
yeah, so $10 a head or something would be
fine. It's not going to deter you from spending $1,300. Yeah. No. $1,320 would be allowable.
Well, effectively, we paid to get in because we paid our $30 for breakfast and that got us in.
Right.
We just had some food on the way.
What about the option of not introducing the expense of a ticketing process but gold coin donation at the door as an option?
I'm not so sure about that. For mine, I feel like you need to put proper ticketing in place to give the competition added value. And if it's gold coin, it feels like you're at a charity event.
Yeah. I tell you what I like at the moment is that the women's games get to play at their home ground. So Bulldogs playing at Witten Oval, Carlton are at Icon. Who knows, Giants may play at Spotless, but Blacktown's their original home. So they get to take it home. And some fields, like how Collingwood playing at Olympic Park, is not a field that they could have a ticketing option or a gated option. So that's where that would probably change. If they stay at Victoria Park, it could potentially be done. But I think that's what they'd have to look at is of all the teams, because I don't think Brisbane has played at a field that could be ticketed. They've played at pretty open fields.
No, they played out up north.
Don't they, down at Randwick, don't they put a big cyclone fence up and ticket it when they have rugby matches on there that they want to
play? At Drummoyne,
can be. Drummoyne's ticketable.
Just down at Randwick. I mean, it's a smaller oval. There's less fencing, but.
Mm. I think it's interesting because that's a really good point, Kiwi, and I think that you know, as average punters, sometimes we don't think about the logistics of actually making it a ticketed event. But, you know, maybe over the balance of, you know, if there are, seven teams in each conference, you know, over the balance of those teams, they could maybe find a way where they're sort of balancing out ticketed versus non-ticketed according and making sure that there's an even kind of supply for that spectator group or that fan base. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but it seems to me that it's time to start in and putting some money back into women's football from the event.
Because I know they're upgrading Arden Street Oval.
Yeah.
But that's another one that's very open. So they'll put the grandstand in, but it's a picket fence and you just walk up and lean on the picket fence. So they'd be hard to ticket. But you want them playing there. So there's a little bit of a – I just like that they get to play at home.
Mm.
So there's a little bit of a catch-22.
Nat.
Fiona. Have you got a question for me?
What was your favourite moment of the year?
Well, I'm going all the way back to round one And Geelong's rookie Nina Morrison was my standout for the whole year. What she did in that very first game that she played was unbelievable. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, I got to witness that. I cannot wait to see what else she can do. Then she did a knee about 3 days later. At least it wasn't live on TV to make me sad. But she was incredible, and I thought, wow, look at this system. If you can just get, you know, move through from juniors and school footy and then into club footy, geez, they're bloody good, these kids, aren't they? And that was my standout for the year.
M.
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? Put me on the spot.
Actually, she told you about 3 hours ago you needed to prepare. There's no on the spot in here.
Give me a chance, will you? Geez, you can't get away with anything here, can you?
No.
Look, the Taylor Harris stuff is the obvious. What I think I will say about that is Darcy Vesio's response to it was a highlight in a different way, you know, getting away from on-field things, and there were so many on-field highlights. I mean, Maddie Prespakis and the future of women's footy is an absolute highlight for me. But Darcy Vesio's humorous response, you know, to a situation that got really heavy and had some really serious issues, she brought a lovely, you know, she took off Taylor's kick by photoshopping half of Taylor's body onto her own. And it was quite authentic. I admire her Photoshop skills. We spoke about it recently. But, you know, it's just another element of the game, isn't it? It's just another part of the community.
Yep. Trace.
Yeah, look, I'm going to go to a Giants highlight. And it's along the lines, and I've got to say that I've never really experienced the kind of the youth coming through and being so impressed with them. I've always been of the belief that they need a couple of years really at women's football level to really crack in and start to stand up. But I want to highlight Haneen Shrika's last round game following the incident in New Zealand. And I think as a young woman who showed a lot of resilience being dropped from the Giants team in after her rookie season, not being offered a contract, went back to club footy, worked her bum off, turned up, still had an up and down, in and out a couple of weeks, and got that last opportunity to come in, and able to, you know, to rise above what had been a difficult time for the Muslim community and to put it all out there on the field and to play her best game and earn a Rising Star nomination, which will go a long way for her continuing, you know, participation at AFLW level, I believe. I think that was a highlight for me because, you know, it goes back to what we discussed before. It's about local talent. It's about resilience. It's about investing in local New South Wales footballers, and it's about, you know, giving people a chance to demonstrate what they can do. And, yeah, I just love that. So, yeah, that's nice. My highlight.
Kiwi. Okay, I've got two.
No time. There's only one.
Okay, I've got three.
Well, I've got another one then.
With the Kiwi explaining the rules, it's getting pulled up by Victorians having some debate over it, which – fantastic. I like listening to their point of view, but it also means they're listening to our Sydney podcast. So that's Woo! A highlight. Another one, I was just really awesome to see the smiles on the face of the Giants when they walked off that last game, just to see whether it was relief or joy or some ecstasy that they can actually win some football, play quality football. That was awesome. But the big one, I guess, is obviously yesterday's match and the crowd numbers. We were at the first grand final and that was pretty damn awesome. Last year I thought was flat, and yesterday's one, to have 53,000 and be a part of that was incredible. But the statistics of who watched it on Channel 7 is mind-blowing. If you don't know, this is what Channel 7 has released. 321,000 people tuned in for the grand final. 154,000 in Melbourne. Why don't you jump on a plane? Brisbane, 23,000. Adelaide, 91,000. Perth, 33,000. Sydney, 20,000. That's a lot even in Sydney watching the women's grand final.
How do they get them? Like if I'm watching on my phone, does that come
big
up?
Big data, or? I think. Big data.
That covers it all.
Skynet. So that's not.
But that doesn't include Foxtel, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's just their Channel 7.
And 7, 8.
Just 7. Okay.
I think this just proves that, one, it's awesome the game gets to travel to the hometown that, you know, wins the top spot for the grand final, creates atmosphere, and I think that's what Adelaide put on was a theatre. It was their big special oval, home team, you know, come back, get some victory. And two, the game is well played and well interested by crowds outside of Victoria. And, you know, I think it's just going upwards.
Good one. Fiona, what's your highlight?
I hadn't realised that Ebony Marinoff hadn't gotten a goal because she'd been, you know, such a character for 2 seasons. So when she got her first goal, that was so fantastic. What a celebration.
Can I quickly chime in with...
another one.
I'm a Giants fan.
Leave me alone. Cecilia Later and the Collingwood Footy Club getting around Seabomb's retirement.
Cecilia Later.
And all the girls on their Silly Saturday dressed up as Cecilia McIntosh. So there were bobsleds and Australian outfits and archery outfits and footy
Cole
outfits.
Staff. I saw Cole Staff.
Cole Staff. Yeah. Perfect. Yep.
Fantastic.
Nan Bomb is in there too.
Great.
Fantastic. Cool.
Hello, Giants women. It's Fee here coming to you from my makeshift home studio. There's just a couple of acknowledgements I forgot, and thank yous are important. So I was called out on the Outer Sanctum by one Emma Race for being a bit of a Debbie Downer about the conference system. She told us to make our fridges, grab 10 other fridges, and turn up and watch these games. So I took that on board, and I also spoke to one Susan Alberti and explained to her that I'd had a terrible experience at the exhibition matches where we'd been virtually locked out of the SCG and it was a disgrace. Now, she said to me something that I really took to heart, and that was, you have to work with the league. You have to work with what you've got. So I decided to go ahead and make this podcast and thankfully gathered this great group of women around me. Special thanks to Emma Race, who, whilst on holidays with her sister Lucy Race, gave me some of her time. We had a long phone call and she gave me some really helpful advice about doing this pod. Well, we find ourselves at the end of our pod.
Only 1.5 hours.
Can we do another one? Let's do another one sometime.
Sure. Why don't we?
So if there's 20,000 people tuning into the grand final in Sydney, some of you must be listening. So tell us what you want us to pod about next year. Get online.
And
get
tell
on
your friends.
Tell your friends. Tune in because we're
tell
pretty
your
nice.
Mate. Yeah. So during this pod, we have interviewed Carol Collier, Maddie's mum, Yvonne Bonner, Fridge, and Ingrid. Yes. Ingrid Nielsen.
Tonks.
Fridge's Amanda Tonks. Frugia.
Yes. Do you want me to start again? God, yes, hecklers.
I was just chiming in.
We've had, and Seabomb. And we had Cora join us in the studio. And I have to say that was another big fan moment for me. I'm a big fan of the work she does. You know, when she talked about the working with marginalised groups, that's kind of what I do, what I have done in the past and what I continue to do in various forms. So I'm a big fan of her for her work, let alone all of her sporting achievements. During this season, we've been struck by lightning, made fridges and stood uncomfortably in them in the Queensland heat. We've been – well, I've been to every Giants game. You haven't, but I have.
And, you're the winner there, Fee.
Pardon?
You're the winner there.
Thanks, Trace.
Truly committed.
And I've been to at least one match every round. So when I went to Melbourne, I got to several. So not counting the prelims.
You made 4-1 round.
Yeah, I did make 4 matches. And
in 2 states.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Thanks.
Football's not free.
No, football's not free. It's cost a lot. God help.
We can get a GoFundMe page for fees costs to attend AFLW.
Susan Alberti calling Susan Alberti. Tag her in, Fee.
So this pod came out of a bit of frustration from my point of view because I didn't feel as if Sydney players were getting enough light shone on them. So after one of her trips away, my partner returned home and I said, I think I'm going to do a podcast. What do you reckon? So I spoke to Coach Kiwi, who spoke to Tracy Kick, who spoke to Nat Morgan and Emma Phillips, and together we have formed this fantastic group. We spoke to our friend T,
whom we know through footy and
Masters,
through Masters and
comedy.
She's community a comedian cup. And she's a member of the Rec League Community Cup team.
Whalers. Go Whalers.
Go Whalers. She spoke to Kim Tan, who's a sailor. Kim Tan's a sailor, but we still love her.
From Community Radio.
Kim Tan spoke to Mick. I don't know how to say Mick's last name.
Mick.
Mick.
DJ Go Mick. Mick.
And Mick said, speak to Anthony post haste, forthwith. And I did. And so when I spoke to Anthony, he said, I think this is a really good idea. We need to get going on this. So
can we do a round of applause for Anthony?
Yay! Yay!
And a massive shout out to 2SER for making this facility available, for providing Anthony of Monday evening to help us record the pod, and for Fee for all of the work she does post this time to pull it together and get it back to Anthony to get it up live and not live, no, recorded and dangerous, so that our loyal listeners can hear our dulcet tones.
What, no singing this week?
No, we had singing already. We had Dad's Army, jeez.
But it's been an absolute pleasure, and I really enjoyed meeting two fantastic women, getting to know Tracy Kick better and forming such a great team. And I've really enjoyed it. I'm really quite sad that it's come to an end.
I know,
it's been ace. So thanks for the initial invitation and letting me stay on like a dirty old hanger-onerer. I've loved it. It's been unreal to be able to chat women's footy nonstop with like-minded.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I thought I was coming in for 2 weeks max just to fill a space. But thanks to you guys for having me around. It really has been awesome.
Thank you.
Beauty.
And thanks to you, our listeners.
To the fans.
To the fans.
And a cheerio to my mum, who's our number one listening fan. She says I'm the best, and I do say you've all been trying really hard. I put it back in a place, but she's loved it. So
has she put a review up yet, Nat?
No.
Get her on that. Get her onto that.
I will. I'll get her onto that bit of technology.
We had all those injured players come off in the grand final, but the prelim, was Freo Carlton, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yes. When player after player after player was coming off. And it made me think of this Andy Griffith monologue from, I think, the 60s or the 50s or whatever. And so he plays this preacher man who's just come across football and he doesn't actually know what it is. So he turns up at this match and he finally figured it out. But both bunches of them wanted this funny-looking little pumpkin to play with. And I know, friends, that they couldn't eat it because they kicked it the whole evening and it never busted. Both them bunches for wanted that thing. One bunch got it and made the other bunch just as mad as they could be. And friends, I seen that evening the awfulest fight that I have ever seen in my life. They would run at one another and kick one another and throw one another down and stomp on one another and grind their feet into one another and I don't know what all, and just as fast as one of them would get hurt, they'd tow her off and run another on.